It's 8:11. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Council meeting and work session starting at 1:15 tomorrow afternoon at the Sheldon Richens Building at Kimball Junction. On the phone with a preview, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
And welcome back. Hey, so you have been away on National Guard duties. I think it was last year you were promoted to like number one in command for the National Guard for the state of Utah.
Well, not number one. I still have the adjutant general and the governor as a boss. So I'm in charge of all of the Army units for the Utah National Guard.
So how do those duties work with your taxpayer-funded job as county manager? I mean, is that part of your negotiated contract?
Well, somewhat, but mostly I use my vacation time or any time that I have available through my contract in order to fulfill those duties. A lot of the time that I spend is either on weekends or around the county duties. I tend to spend a lot of time at night doing some of these things as well.
Yeah. So is it working out okay? I mean, are you getting any feedback from staff that maybe it's not working for them?
I haven't at this time. I mean, the last 2 weeks that I was away was kind of unusual. In fact, in the last 15 years, I've probably never taken a full 2 weeks away for National Guard duty. It happens to be that the course that I needed to take as an introduction to being a general officer, that's how long this course lasts. We all have things that we do in our private lives. I mean, our employees get their vacation during the year. They also work around their private lives in order to do their work, and I do the same. I have not gotten any negative feedback back from the council about those duties, but if that came, I would make the adjustments in order to make it work.
Yeah, more than anything though, don't you just need a break, like a vacation?
Well, yeah, and you know, I do those things as well. I did take a vacation earlier in the year, in around the May timeframe, and got away at that time. I'll be taking some time around the Christmas holiday. But, you know, the main thing at this time of the year is making sure that our budget gets passed. That's probably the main duty that I have with the council. So I really tried to make sure that I'm available for that, as well as sealing up the deal for the 2018 budget with those two public hearings. And so absolutely in town very concentrated on my county duties through that time.
Okay.
Well, I should also add that the National Guard is very accommodating to me being the county manager as well. They want me to be a good county manager.
Okay. Let's turn to the agenda. We'll get to the budget in just a second. But first up is
sure.
At 1:30, a presentation by the Environmental Stewardship Work Group which is made up of several administrators and department heads and working on some strategic effect. What is this?
Okay, so we've put together a team within the county that includes our sustainability manager Lisa Yoder, Rich Bulla, our health department director, and some of his staff, in order to kind of as well as our landfill enterprise, the stuff around our sustainability program hits several departments, and we want those coordinating at the same time so that we can report back to the council in a coordinated way on the accomplishments that are being made. So this is actually a result of some of our strategic planning and kind of a report back to the council on what they can, what we've collaborated on, what will be the collaboration will happen in the future, and then how we'll be reporting on that to themselves and the public.
Okay. Turning to the budget, there will also be a short presentation with regard to a cost of living adjustment recommendation by HR Director Brian Bellamy. So are we talking about giving staff a raise?
Yeah. So in the budget, we budgeted for, or in my recommended budget, we budgeted for a 2% cost of living increase. If you look through the packet materials, whether we're dealing with a Wasatch Front Index or the Western Urban Region Index through the Bureau of Labor Statistics or other statistics that are available. It ranges this year at this time anywhere between, I think, 3.9% and about 1.9%. And so the recommendation we're making to the council is that we set the cost of living increase at a 2% rate. And right now in the manager's proposal, we don't have any merit increases budgeted, but I'm expecting that the council will want to talk about that as well.
All right. Let's see. You also heard from more departments at a special session on Monday. After this week, council has one more meeting after this until the first budget hearing on December 6th. So what are you hoping to accomplish with Wednesday's discussion?
Well, mostly it's tying up loose ends. I mean, there's several parts that of our budget that departments and offices don't necessarily have direct contact with. We have special revenues. We have grants that are given to nonprofits. Other things like that the council needs to hear about and contemplate with our budget director, as well as they've asked questions or questions things within the budget through these presentations over the last few weeks. We've been keeping track of those, and over this meeting and probably a meeting on the 29th of November, we want to go over those with them again and get some resolutions so we know the direction they want to go.
Okay. We had heard yesterday from the Wasatch County manager that their operations budget is less than $20 million. Ours here in Summit County, at least twice that amount, right?
At least twice that amount. I mean, we're looking at a operations budget around the $53 million mark. And, you know, it's a matter of population as well as the types of services that the county needs to provide. The Wasatch County is probably not as deep into the tourism realm as we are as far as our primary economy. So there are some differences there, of course.
All right. And that being what? Just the cost of public safety? Is that when you talk about the tourism aspect?
Certainly public safety is one of them, but just the levels of service around things that we've been talking about for the past few months, whether that's road plowing, road maintenance, road building new roads, that's a large part of it. So everything that we do, whether it be the health department, whether it be the libraries, all of that are provided at a pretty high level of service that our public has demanded over the years.
Okay. Let's see, a bond proposal, a $20 million bond passed in 2011. We're looking to refinance it at $18 million. Why does the county continue to do this fairly frequently?
Well, I mean, ourselves and our district, of course, this is the Basin Recreation District that is suggesting to refinance these bonds. A lot of times it's in order to save money. In this case, the refinance of the bonds brings the interest percentage rates down from somewhere a little bit north of 4% down to about 2.5%. And that will end up saving about $1.5 million in payments towards interest over the life of the bonds. So that would be directly reflected back in the mill levy that supports that bond in future years if that refinance happens.
Yeah, and every time we do this, we end up paying for closing costs and refinancing fees and stuff, and so I'm guessing that is accounted for and still a...
It is accounted for within that $1.5 million savings, and of course those are always figured in as our bond advisors relook at our bonds.
All right. Council possibly adopting a mental wellness strategic plan. How much is being budgeted in the 2018 budget for this?
Well, that's still one of the outstanding questions. We did budget for a couple of positions and some revenue associated with that within the health department to deal with some of the first steps around the strategic plan. But the strategic plan was still being developed and was still being reviewed by council as we presented the budget in October. So one of the reasons for this item on this week is to discuss those numbers for 2018 to see if the council wants to take any further steps, and then we'll have to discuss how that fits within the budget.
So is there money in the budget if in fact we do increase taxes as proposed?
There's probably some flexibility. The other thing that we're going to have to do over the next 3 weeks as we're preparing for the public hearings on the budget is to update our revenue figures. We always, estimating our revenue for a future year is always something that's at the end of the day, it's a guess. But we get more scientific and we get closer to it towards the end of the year as we know better how we've spent our 2017 budget. So we'll be doing those updates, and we'll be then discussing with the council what flexibility we have.
Okay. Do we have a ballpark number though that you're putting out there?
I don't have a ballpark number yet. I know we're going to be discussing that on Wednesday, and I believe that the health department through Rich and Aaron will have some suggestions, but I don't have that information with me right now.
All right. Some of those specific items that were mentioned, though, is having a provider for Camas and Colville, a suicide prevention program, as well as a bilingual mental health service. So these are still not funded. We're just talking about some priority or?
That is correct. Those are not funded at this time within the county's budget. So I think part of the discussion is going to be where else can we go within the community. It was never the idea that the strategic plan would be totally funded by the county. It was going to take a community effort to bring about and implement the strategic plan. So I think that's part of this discussion as well.
All right. Let's see. There is an appeal over the horse boarding service being run by Verna Nielsen on Old Ranch Road. Back in September, the Snyderville Planning Commission approved this on a 4-1 vote. A group of neighbors have appealed, citing traffic impacts, noise, odor, pests. The Nielsen's attorney says that Old Ranch Road is an agricultural neighborhood. So is the staff recommending that the council uphold that horse boarding use?
Well, I think the staff has recommended that they uphold the Planning Commission's recommendation. One of the things that the council asked for in the interim between the two hearings was a legal opinion from our attorney's office around the legality of these types of activities there in regards to our zoning. I think that's one of the things that's going to be reviewed. Unfortunately, I wasn't at that discussion to hear the details of it, but I'm sure our staff's ready for the further discussion by the council on that.
All right. And as an appeal, there's no public hearing on this?
That's correct. It is simply an item of consideration at this point.
All right. Each side will make their presentation. That's how it works usually.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. Also an item on the North Summit Recreation District. It seems to be a two-part item. Staff recommending RAP money of about $198,000 go to the Rec District. What's that for?
Well, it's actually a redirection of a grant that was received by the North Summit Rec District earlier. I want to say it was around 2009 or 2011. The original grant was about $450,000. They purchased some property with a portion of that, about $250,000. They want to direct the remainder of that grant towards the implementation of park equipment and some park amenities on that property that they bought. The RAP Recreation Committee has suggested that that's an appropriate use under the original grant. So that's what the council is considering is the redirection of that remaining part of the grant towards that purpose. The other grant, which was a restaurant grant, they asked to continue that. The North Summit Rec District asked to continue a remaining balance of about $45,000. But the restaurant committee, because that grant has not been performed on or hasn't been expended up until this point, is going to ask that the council have the North Summit Rec District give that money back, and we'll put that back into the pool to be granted out in the next round.
All right. Also wanted to ask you about the forbearance agreement about Silver Creek Village. A staff report says that the developers did not meet a deadline this summer to finish several items, including a trail, a Highland Estates tunnel, wetland basins and rehab, a neighborhood park. So why were the deadlines missed?
The the deadlines, I think for a lot of different reasons, I think that's more appropriate for the developer to answer. But the result is these forbearance agreements require them to put up bonds in order to guarantee that that work will be finished. And that allows their development proposals to continue to move forward through the process now that we have a guarantee that those projects will be completed.
Okay. And then finally, I just wanted to ask, is there anything new to report about the Oscarthorpe Ranch property?
Nothing new. We're still meeting closely with the Summit Lands Conservancy about that. We're really trying hard to have all the players involved understand each other about where we're coming at this project from a couple of different angles, from their perspective, from the property owner's perspective, and then from the county's perspective. But the good news is that we're still actively discussing it.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, Park City Mountain scheduled to start turning the lifts Friday morning at 9 in the studio with a rundown of the upcoming winter season. I have Chief Operating Officer at Park City, Bill Rock. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So a year ago, the resort had to postpone a week with similar kind of temperatures. Are you thinking we need to do that again?
Yeah, you know, interestingly, early season we had some great snowmaking windows. So we're really ahead of where we were last year at this time with snow. And the forecast looks great for the weekend, too. Really cold temps. So we'll see. Actually, right now our team's on the mountain taking a look to see about the snow we've made, to see if we can get open for Friday. And if not, we'll let everybody know. We're planning to make that announcement later today once we evaluate what we have up there.
Okay. So what we're hearing from NOAA, the National Oceanic Administration, they're predicting a warmer than normal winter for our area. Who do you pay attention to when you look at? You just go, it is what it is.
Yeah, we're all amateur meteorologists. We all have our own little thing. You know, my buddy, my neighbor Mike Ruzek has the buoy. You know, the buoy was pretty accurate last year for snowfall. But we actually have a gentleman we pay to look at the weather for us. And honestly, at this time of the year, I pick the report that's the most optimistic, and that's the one I believe. So I think, if you look at last year, we got off to a bit of a slow start, but wow, what a season. And, fingers crossed for the same thing.
Yeah. So the buoy, what is the buoy saying? I've forgotten about that one. Yes, I remember, though.
Putting a plug in for my buddy. The buoy is this buoy out in the Pacific that he tracks that correlates swells in the ocean to moisture flow into Utah, and it was pretty accurate last year. So
what's it saying this year?
So far, every time it's popped out there, we've gotten some sort of weather event here. So, Mike, keep it going, buddy.
Yeah. Okay. And in terms of, we won't really know what you're going to open with, but would just be a couple of lifts that we've got?
So a typical, what you'd see at a typical opening on a snowmaking scenario. So, payday lift, home run. If we get really cold temps, we get the Treasure Hollow Trail. On the canyon side, we'd open up with Saddleback. We'd upload the Red Pine Gondola, and then we'd ski on Kokopelli down to Painted Horse into High Meadow. So, pretty standard opening package.
Okay. And then just as it allows, you just keep opening things up and hope to have everything open by late December?
Yeah. The great news is on both sides of the resort, we've got a fantastic snowmaking system. We invested in snowmaking this summer as well, put a big snowmaking project in Treasure Hollow. And so when the temps get cold, our team can really make a lot of snow. So yeah, if the weather turns, we're poised to really open a lot of terrain very quickly.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what you've got going for this season. First, no more night skiing, kind of a dying experience across the country, really. But it's like nobody showed up, huh?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think, like any business, we make adjustments to our customer demand. And really, night skiing is, there's lots of nostalgia about night skiing, and very few people actually go night skiing. So the most important thing about night skiing is that it really supports the race teams and the kids that are training. And that will continue. And in fact, the experience for them will get even better. But for the public, yeah, it's just an offering that there's not a lot of demand for these days.
So you'll open up payday then for training as well?
Yeah, we've been talking to Jesse and the team, and definitely some training on payday for the kids.
And I'm guessing you probably love the fact that all of those teams consolidated under Park City Ski and Snowboard. Now you've got just one person to talk to instead of a half dozen.
Yeah, I think it's great, and you know that part for us is certainly more convenient. But I think it's better for the kids. I mean, to have the opportunity to work in a one club, more efficient operations for the club ultimately, and then the opportunity to change sports. You know, to actually try Nordic jumping and freestyle, and then alpine racing at that young age. That program's pretty exciting. So I'm thrilled that they've done this, and it's taken a lot of great leadership on their part.
Yeah, and you also rent to or lease space to Salt Lake groups as well, like Roland Hall and.
Yeah, so we do. We will continue to support the teams that we've traditionally supported. Anybody else, though, who's a visiting team, we're going to channel through the new club and have them coordinate hill space with them. So typical partners like the U.S. Ski Team and University of Utah and Westminster and all those will continue to work directly with our team.
Okay. Let's see. What else have you got? You've got your full crew lined up. You've had, I know, some job fairs.
Yeah, I'm actually pleased with our recruiting so far this year, and I think it's known, you know, economy's great. Recruiting in any mountain town has been challenging. It's going to be challenging, and yet we've made great progress and a little bit ahead of where we were last year at this time with recruiting and a great crew. We've started to have our welcome back sessions with them, and there's a ton of enthusiasm. So, yeah, we've got a great staff this year. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. No more volunteer ski patrollers. We had talked about that before. Were you able to hire the number of professionals that you'll need for the winter?
Yeah, we have been. We've got a great patrol. They do a tremendous job. And, you know, our volunteers did a great job for us, too. But this was a point in our evolution with as big and complicated as the resort is to go to a fully paid staff. And, yeah, we've been able to hire because it's a great job. There's a lot of people who'd love to be ski patrollers. And so to be able to offer that opportunity has been great. And we're ready to go with that crew.
All right. So you don't have any more volunteers on the mountain then anymore, huh?
No, we don't. Occasionally, if a club or someone is putting on a race and they can recruit and use volunteers, that happens. But we don't have any that volunteer directly for us.
Okay. And then also new are going to be parking directors. Tell me about this.
Yeah. So this is really, I'm excited about this.
I think we all are.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that. I think, you know, we hear from guests all the time about our parking experience and how it could be improved. And so we've decided to take an approach like you would do at a sporting event or a music festival. And we have a third party vendor that we've hired to help us do directed parking. So like you'd see at an event like that, you pull into the lot, there's someone there with a vest and they're directing you into your spot and it's much more orderly. I think we, you know, the orderliness will be important, but also the fact that we can park more efficiently. And folks who want to get spots can get a spot.
Yeah. Any guess at what percentage increase you'll see in park? Because, I mean, it was all over, right, when you didn't have somebody side by side.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Not sure exactly yet how much we could get. We did a test on Saturday. We learned a few things in our test. And then I think people will be pleasantly surprised when we have it.
Yeah. But you're also, in order to do that, closing the parking lot. So tell me how that's going to work. So between 6 and 7:30.
Yeah, so we're just going to hard close the lots in the morning just to basically be more purposeful about how we use our lots and get ready to open and try to control the entries into the lot in a more orderly fashion. So we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, folks, obviously we won't be able to, if someone parked overnight and they're there, and they'll still be there. But it's just our effort to manage the parking more carefully so that the arrival experience is better for our guests.
Yeah. So you won't be towing people?
Yeah. You know, if people park illegally from time to time, we have towed and we probably will in the future. But and it's particularly important around snow removal days. So I wouldn't say we won't, but, you know, it's not going to be an aggressive effort.
All right. And then in terms of preferred parking, that is what? I mean, I know it's the underground, but are there other preferred lots?
Yeah. So we have carved out so we do have paid preferred parking underground. People can buy season's passes for. In fact, you know, my family, we buy a season's pass down there just because it's so convenient. We are going to have 20 spots on the surface that's more preferred parking. And really our effort there is around carpooling. So it'd be discounted parking there for carpoolers, kind of preserve 20 spots for people who arrive late, want to get a parking spot, and people who carpool.
Okay. And that's underground. Is that what you're saying?
There's underground. There's also 20 spots on the surface.
Got it. Okay. And is that both at Canyons and Park City side?
Yeah. Sorry. Good question. No, that's on the Park City side. On the Canyon side, really no changes to the parking on the Canyon side. You know, the Cabriolet lot works really well. And there is already paid preferred parking up at Sundial.
Right. Okay. What else do you want to let us know?
Well, you know, Epic Pass deadline's coming up, so I would definitely go to epicpass.com. Now's the time to get your pass. And also on Thursday this week, we're doing Wake Up Park City again. So we'll be at 8 coffee shops around town, free coffee, free travel mug. And I saw the mugs. They look great this year. And the nonprofit is the People's Health Clinic. So if you come by and get a free cup of coffee, get a free mug, we'll donate to the People's Health Clinic.
Okay.
So come see us on Thursday.
So the last day to purchase an Epic Pass is November 19th. I'm surprised. Why not sell them throughout the whole season?
Yeah, you know, our whole model is it's a great deal. And so we definitely give the best deals early, and we want to get that early season commitment. So that kind of deadline really gets people motivated to go ahead and make a commitment. And you know how the Epic Pass works. If you ski even 4 or 5 days, it pretty much pays for itself. And so folks around here, it's the best deal in skiing.
All right. So you kind of pay early when there's not a whole lot of cash flow, and then pay big bucks if you don't buy one during the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really changed the model. I mean, the pass used to be something that just people who skied 100 days would buy. But now, you know, anyone could buy one, and we sell them in all 50 states and multiple countries. And so, yeah, if you ski more than 4 or 5 days, the Epic Pass is the way to go.
Yeah. Have you set the daily rate?
We haven't yet. So, no, not yet.
Okay, I think it was like 122 last year, so it's going to be at least that, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, there's the best way to buy a lift ticket is not at the ticket window. So the first choice is the Epic Pass. The second choice is an advanced purchase lift ticket, and that's where the most discounts are. So, you know, if you end up at the ticket window, I would say we didn't do our job in communicating the best way to get a ticket. And yet, you know, that some folks decide they want to ski at the last minute, and that's great too.
Okay, Bill, thanks for coming in. Hope to hear back from you later today. KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, 6 months ago, Park City Municipal named David Thacker as its new chief building official. At the time, he said he would be giving himself a six-month timeline to make improvements and streamline the building process. We thought it would be a good time to invite him back after 6 months and see how that's going. Good morning, David. Thanks
good morning.
For being here.
Thanks for having me.
So prior to taking on the top job here in the building department, you had worked for years as an inspector here as well as Wasatch County, and then had an opportunity in Boulder, Colorado. So you had a pretty good idea, I'm guessing, of how systems work or don't work, huh?
Yeah, I think it's amazing, you know, for delivering a similar product as far as building permitting and inspecting, the differences from jurisdiction to jurisdiction is quite phenomenal. We have a great program here in Park City, and that's, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to continuing to enhance. But I think we've made some great improvements, not just since I've been here, but even prior to that. And I think there's a lot of good things going on.
Well, let's talk about some of the improvements you were able to make in the last 6 months.
Well, you know, one of the things I learned over the 6 month course is that I shouldn't start out by saying I'll give myself 6 months and come back, because you guys are very good at getting me here right on time. But some of the things that we wanted to work on, and one of the things that's very important to me, is getting some stakeholder outreach and understanding what our customers really need from us, because that's what our job is about. We're here for the public. We're here to help them understand what our rules and regulations really are. And as we do that, they're able to deliver the product that they need to. And so as we've met with some stakeholders, we've been able to learn what they've wanted to see and what we've needed to do on our end to improve. Some of those items include consistency in our enforcement and inspection, and related to plan review, ensuring that everyone that goes out on a job, whether it be Inspector A or Inspector B or in Code Enforcement Officer A or B, they deliver the same message. And although each person has their individuality, we want to make sure that at the end game, it's all consistent. And so that's one of the big pieces that we've been working on. I think we're doing a great job with that. There's always room for improvement. We'll continue to work on that to improve, but I think we're really getting in the right mode there. One of the other things we heard from customers is reducing our time at the counter. So we have a lot of people that come in, and they are able to obtain permits over the counter in the morning and submit for permits as well. As we work with them, some days are busier than others, so we get a lineup, and it does take some time to get through each customer. We want to make sure we spend the proper amount of time with them. So we've looked at some process changes to make sure that we're respecting the time of our customers as they come in, and those are including the upcoming and current use of a Dropbox, where customers are able to come in, fill out a form, drop their information off, and submit it. And when we review it, at a time that they're not there. So we're not taking an hour and a half to 2 hours of their day to get through a permit. They can know that it's dropped off and that we'll get back to them as soon as there's an approval or if we need additional information. And as we continue to do that, we're also looking at an upgraded software system, which has been kind of a topic of discussion for quite some time. We're really getting into the final stages of getting that contract nailed down so that we can actually put a timeline together and be more specific on how we're going to get that going. And what that's going to offer us to do is give us an opportunity to offer our customers an electronic submittal process, which will save a lot of time, a lot of effort, and then it'll be more of an electronic correspondence and via the phone as opposed to having a physical body waiting in line, which can become very frustrating and time-consuming for our customers.
Right. So just like we get notifications on many other things that the building department could send out a notification, plans are ready or, you know, need to do this or – I mean,
exactly. Exactly.
So now you need a digital – specialist in the
yes, and you know, we've got a great IT department that's helped us through this all, and they continue to work with us. So I think we'll be able to get that up and running in a timely manner once we get all the contractual piece of it taken care of.
Well, and I know, as any builder knows, and the few times I have walked up there in the morning, it's like a party. I mean, there are a lot of people there.
There are.
So that's the plan, is to try and just let them know when they should be there, or if they're just coming there to drop off, so they shouldn't have to spend too much time, huh?
That's correct. We really want to reduce that time.
Yeah, and what's the biggest problem that you have, though, for them? Is it just they're not submitting complete applications, or, I mean, what are your challenges?
Well, I think that rolls into one of the other points I was going to make, is that we have, I mean, anytime you're working with city ordinances and regulations, there are state regulations that are kind of coupled into that, and so really the challenge is making sure that we get all the information we need in order to issue a permit while the customer is able to know exactly what that is. And that can become cumbersome as some of the customers, they want to get in, they want to get the permit, and they want to get to work. If they're not in the field doing the work, they're not making money, and we're trying to respect that. But at the same time, we have to get them to take the step-by-step process to really complete their form. So I'd say, making sure we have complete submittals is one of the biggest items that we run up against. And I'd just say another one is there are days that we just get 10 people that come in at the same time, and so we have to work through them one by one, and that can become challenging as well.
Okay. Other things that you wanted to mention that you're doing? Or?
Yeah, I think the other couple of things, one of our big ticket items that we've really worked on is that we heard from our customers is through our construction mitigation plan or process that we have restricted working days throughout the city. They're related to specific holidays, the Sundance Film Festival, et cetera. Previously, and I'd say up until about 3 months ago, we had just over 50 days throughout the year that were restricted working days, which is great for those as we try to mitigate between what can be done and what can't be done. For people that are living here, it's kind of a relief. It gives them a break from the construction noise and activity that goes on. However, it also interrupts a lot of the construction activities that are going on and the livelihoods of those that are doing the work. And so we wanted to be able to come up with a compromise. So we met with council. We were able to talk through that. And we've reduced that 50-day restricted working dates down 20 days. So we've only got about 30 now. And then even with that, we went one step further, and we're going to look at the activity that's going on at each job site for the requests that are made to work on those days. And if there's no traffic or noise or impacts to the neighborhoods for the work going on, so mostly if it's interior work and pretty quiet, then we'll go ahead and be able to give a little bit more wiggle room so the work can get completed.
Yeah. So what I hear, and you probably hear too, just about how difficult it is to build in Park City. Is that a good thing?
It depends on which side of the equation you're on. Yes, it is a good thing from my estimation, and I think the reason it's difficult to build in Park City is because we take pride in what's going to be built. We take pride in the environment that we live in, and we want to maintain that. And so the regulations we have are directly related to what we want to be able to have there, as well as what people want to be able to build. So it's a compromise that we make, but the challenge is getting through and making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
All right. I mean, on average, how long does it take to get a building permit approved?
Yeah, and that's based on residential or commercial. Residentially, the state has implemented some plan review regulations that we need to adhere to. We've been doing pretty good with those. So initial review has to be 14 days or less for residential. And for some commercial projects, it has to be 21 days or less. Our average right now for both is roughly 6 days for our initial review, which is pretty good. At that point, we turn that over to the contractor or builder. They're able to make the corrections that are necessary and get them back in, and then we try to get through that same process. I think one of the items that we're continuing to work on at the MARSAC building is how we coordinate better across the community development team with engineering and planning to make sure that we're getting the reviews all done concurrently and getting one list of rather than having two or three lists going to the customer.
Okay. Let's talk briefly. What did the council decide to do with the Kimball crane? Leave it up all winter?
So, yeah, the Kimball crane, we went to council last week. The decision was made to keep it up all winter, at least through March 31st, which is when the extension was asked to be or the extension was requested. The only caveat to that is the crane does have the opportunity to fold down. So the big horizontal piece at the top can be folded. You know, the example they gave was similar to a Lego. It will fold down, and so you'll have kind of a pull, if you will, or a mast that sticks up about 25 feet as opposed to what you see now. So the request was made that they do that during the Christmas holiday and also over the Sundance Film Festival timeframe.
Okay. What's the latest with the Star Hotel?
The Star Hotel, not much has changed currently. It's still vacant. We're continuing to work with ownership to talk about how that can be improved, but it is still considered a dangerous building. However, we do have structural reports that indicate it's not a danger to anyone that's not inside of it. So the structural integrity is still there. It will be able to withstand a winter. The only caveat there is as long as we maintain the snow, which we're working with the ownership on to make sure that there's not a large accumulation of snow on the roof.
All right. And then what about the Centennial? Because that's been sitting empty for, gosh, more than a decade.
You know, I don't have any information on the Centennial to give you an update on, so I apologize for that.
Okay. I mean, I'm guessing you don't do the same thing with the snow loads on that building.
Yeah, right? We definitely do. I mean, our goal is to make sure that the buildings are able to withstand the winter months. Those are definitely the hardest months on these buildings as the snow loads come in. So we'll make sure that we evaluate those and make sure it's safe.
All right. And what about the Silver Queen? Is that finally finished?
Silver Queen is finished completely open and operational, from my understanding.
Okay. And what's going on at what was formerly known as Zoom there in the old depot building?
Yeah, Zoom. I know that there's some applications in for permit and use for that over the Sundance Film Festival. I'm not privileged enough to know exactly who's going to be in there, but I know that we have done a pre-inspection there to ensure occupant loads and safety of the equipment and operational equipment that's in there, the fire sprinklers exiting, et cetera.
Yeah. Doesn't it have to be a business, though, before they can just rent out for Sundance?
It does. So they're working on getting it up to speed 100% so that they can get a commercial business license so that they can rent it out for Sundance.
Okay. And what's the latest on banning wood-burning devices? Your predecessor had talked about that was something he was working on. Is that still in the works?
You know, we've talked about that briefly as a department. We have not gone into real depth with that. The state hasn't done anything specific related to that. So we can continue the conversation, but no definite decisions to be made anytime soon.
Okay, David, anything else you want to mention?
You know, I had brought some statistical data. I think that's important to kind of tell our story of what we do. And just real quickly, for this past month of October, our total inspections, that includes building, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, and fire inspections as well, we had just under 2,000 inspections for the month, which is about almost 90 on average per day, which is pretty good for our group. Everyone is just working so diligently, and we've got such a great group up there. I'd put them up against anybody as far as inspections go and plan review. We just do a great job. And that goes to show, you know, based on the permits that we've received as well. So we've had 163 permits go through as of last month. A lot of those were related to additions and alterations, but needless to say, we get a lot of activity up there, and that's one facet of it. The other facet is we have code enforcement staff that are out there, and we just went to council again and gave an update last Thursday, and the work that they're doing is increasing exponentially each year, and we're up almost 200 cases from last year, and a lot of that is due to proactive enforcement. So we've got a lot of great work being done up there, and our staff is who we need to thank for the endless hours of work that they put in on our behalf.
Okay. Hey, David, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
It's David Thacker, Chief Building Official for Park City Municipal. It's 8:52. Good morning. Well, the Project for Deeper Understanding on Thursday, taking on the issue of DACA, the now defunct federal program for deferred action for childhood arrivals. In the studio with details is St. Luke's pastor Charles Robinson, who helped found the project, along with one of the panelists, Leonel Nieto, who has firsthand experience with DACA. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Charles, we'll have you start. Just tell us when and where.
Thursday night, this coming Thursday night, 7 p.m. at St. Luke's in Snyderville.
Yeah, so since DACA has been rescinded, I mean, what's the purpose of Thursday's discussion? Usually you choose issues that are still being discussed or debated.
Well, there are a couple of bills in the Congress right now that can have an impact on the future of all these young people. And so a big part of Thursday night is simply community education, helping folks to understand what the issues are, what's at stake, and what are some of the possible legislative remedies. There's a SUCCEED Act that's being put forward. It's being co-sponsored by Senator Hatch. And then there's a DREAMER Act that is, seems to be a little bit more charitable toward DREAMers. That's also being contemplated in the Congress. The issue is, will the Congress move on this in time, because we're only about roughly 3 months away from the deadline. So we need to learn more about this as a community so we can encourage our legislators to act in a positive, compassionate manner.
So, Lanel, you're one of the panelists. I mean, maybe your participation on this is as a DREAMer, one of those who was a recipient of the DACA program, yeah?
Yeah, so I myself came to the U.S. when I was 11. I lived in Utah pretty much over half of my life. I went to high school here, went to college, came back to college for a master's degree. I'm currently experiencing the stress and the turmoil that comes with DACA being rescinded.
Yeah. When the time came for you to apply for DACA, what was it, 2012, 2011 when that happened, did you or your parents have second thoughts about doing that?
Of course. It was in 2012 when DACA came out. And you remember this was also right around the time of the presidential election, Mitt Romney, Obama. And many of us had second thoughts, not knowing who was going to be elected for president. Obviously, we tended to think that Mitt Romney was going to rescind the program. And now it was flashback now that we have a new presidential cabinet who rescinded the program.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that the fear was that now you're somewhat vulnerable. People know who you are, where you live. And is that the stress that you feel with having those documents from DACA?
Yes. Pre-DACA, I would say that we lived in the shadows for the most part. We worked in the underground economy. We never disclosed our status. With DACA, we were given an opportunity to come out of the shadows and participate in the economy, participate, integrate into our communities. We're now teachers. We're now doctors, nurses, government employees, and so on and so forth. But now the catch is that our information is out in the open. And you remember back in, I want to say, 2010, 2012, there was a release of information from Medicaid here in Utah. About families who received benefits who were undocumented. And that was rogue agents releasing that information. And the current administration is saying, no, we're not going to release that information to ICE or Border Patrol enforcement. But you could always have the possibility that a rogue agent decides to disclose that information and our information could be shared in the public.
Yeah. So given that it's basically a renewal for those that times expired. I mean, I think that the expirations now will start in March.
That's correct. So March 5th is the deadline, and it's expected that after the deadline, we can have about 1,000 DACA beneficiaries across the country lose their status, their work employment authorization, and essentially be fired from their jobs and have to go back to the underground economy, the shadows.
So is that what you expect would happen? I mean, I hate for you to speak for somebody else, but I mean, is that what people you think would do as opposed to going back to a country they don't even know?
Yes, I don't think people are going to go back to their country. I mean, I wouldn't go back to my country. I don't know Mexico. Even though I lived there till I was 11, I just don't know what it's like to live in Mexico. Also, there's no opportunity. The reason why we're here is because we have opportunity here. We have we are educated, and we want to utilize that education to benefit our community.
So what do you think should be done on a national level?
I think our congressman and congresswoman in D.C. should really start to debate this issue as opposed to having it hang in the committees. Right now it's not being debated. It's just being introduced. And I want those bills, as it was mentioned earlier, we actually have four or five bills that have been introduced in the House and in the Senate by Republicans and Democrats alike. And we just want those bills to come out of the committees that they're in and start to be debated. We are obviously pushing for the DREAM Act because, as he said, it's the most beneficial to all of us, and it covers a wider range of dreamers. But I understand that this is politics, and at the end of the day, it could be a different bill altogether.
Yeah, so what that dreamer does is give you a path to citizenship?
Right now, pretty much all the bills that are in the Senate and in the House give us a path to citizenship. It just varies on the time, except for one, which is called the Bridge Act, and that just codifies DACA.
Okay. Other panelists, Charles, you've got an immigration attorney. You've got Rebecca Gonzalez with Bright Futures and somebody representing kind of the Republican side of things from the Sutherland Institute. And
right.
And then Tim Quinn, our state representative.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Great panel.
All right. Again, that's happening Thursday, 7 to 9. Is it being broadcast on KBCW?
It's going to be simulcast on KBCW.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.